Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hey everybody, this is Alice Alvey coming to you live here from the beautiful city, state of Michigan near Detroit, and Dave is not with us today. Dave is speaking at Data Vision User Conference, and he has asked me to host the show, and I am very excited to be able to do that. Now, you're also going to need to bear with me a little bit as I, you know, don't have to run the switchboard all the time. This is normally Dave doing all of that multitasking, and I'm trying to do that now, run the switchboard, and keep everybody in line here on the show. And, of course, on top of everything, Joe Farr actually got called to jury duty. So, right, let's have Alice host the show. Dave won't be there, and Joe won't be there either. So you all are going to get to hear a lot of me today. I'm very pleased to announce that we have a special guest. Our guest today is Mark Reneau, who is with First State Bank. And I have known Mark for a lot of years in the industry here, and we thought it would be great to get someone on the program who knows compliance, knows operations, knows sales, to just start to share with us how everyone's starting to implement the changes going on with the regulations and some of the challenges that everyone is facing. So we'll be talking about that later on in our broadcast. But to get started here, I want to make sure I fill in for what's going on with rates and in the market today, since Joe can't be here. So Joe sent me his write-up. He said MBS prices are up 5/32 this morning. The stock market's down. As the government shutdown continues, we're all kind of in this state of wondering. MBS prices were up 12/32 earlier, but fell as the stock market recovered some loss. Now, MBS prices have made a significant rally over the last month or so. Since September 5th, the day before August payroll numbers were released, MBS prices are up over 4%. So some of this is due to slow growth. Some is due to the uncertainty associated, obviously, with the shutdown. Much of it, though, seems to be associated with the Fed's decision on September 18th not to taper back, right, or not to taper their purchase, QE4 or 5, whatever we're on, right? So MBS prices are at the highest level since the big drop following the June Fed meeting. It was at that meeting that the Fed seemed to be saying the taper was coming, and then, as you know, that was somewhat reversed then on September 18th. So last week, MBS prices were a little changed last week. The government basically dominated the news but had surprisingly little effect on the MBS. Stocks were more affected, and the Dow was down about 200 points. The September jobs report was not released due to the shutdown. The data that was released was mixed and had little effect throughout the week then. So what do we have looking forward to this week? The biggest announcement, maybe the only announcement this week, will be the release of the Fed minutes from their last meeting. We'll get to dissect those, right? Everyone will do the word match and see which word changed and which words didn't. And there'll be the decision to keep purchases at the current level. We already know that, and to not taper. That was a big surprise, and so I think people will, to Joe's notes here, will be really dissecting the opinions behind that, right? How much discussion was around that? How much did the threat of a government shutdown weigh on their decision and so forth? So retail sales and PPI are scheduled to be released on Friday, but the shutdown will likely cause their delay. Treasury auctions are scheduled for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the 3-year, 10-year, and the 30-year, and we'll all just kind of wait and see what happens on that. So we're all in a, you know, kind of a wait and see mode as for this, you know, what's going to be going on in the market, and we'll keep you posted. And as usual, make sure you're checking MBS Quote Line to get the latest and greatest news on rates.
Looking for that competitive edge?
MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Hi, everyone. Alice Alvey here, and I believe I did find Paul Mallow out there. Paul, are you on the line, and are you able to join in with us right now?
I am here. The government shutdown has not affected me, at least my reporting.
Okay, good.
In fact, it's given us more to report on.
That's
really
right.
Quite
so
unbelievable.
What's going
on? Yeah, as everyone in mortgage banking knows, the industry was already getting, shall we say, quite interesting, and now it's even more interesting because now they have to deal with, getting their loans through underwriting without getting the IRS approval on income verification and things along those lines. So we have a number of items today on www.imfnews.com, our website, our daily feed. We unearthed a new letter that's in progress. 63 members of the House and counting are working on a letter which is going to be sent to the FHFA probably this week, more or less asking Edward DeMarco to hold off on lowering the GSE loan limit. This has been in the works for several months now. FHFA is supposed to come out and announce its lower loan limits for next year. There's been a lot of industry pressure on the regulator to hold off, not kill the idea, but to put it off till the first quarter. Now we're hearing it could be put off to the second quarter. Again, 63 members of Congress are going to send a letter. Last week we reported on 13 members of the Senate, including two Republicans, basically asking DeMarco to hold off on lowering the loan limit. Everyone's afraid of the effect it's going to have on the housing and mortgage industry. And now that the government's shut down, I guess we don't need this. There's coming regulations from the CFPB, which everyone's working on too. So it's quite a messy picture out there. So also on imfnews.com, we interviewed Dave Stevens this morning, and he's starting to hear a lot of complaints from his members about deals not closing. Some members, though, on the other hand, are saying that everything's business as usual. But Stevens believes that by the end of the week, there's going to be more pain in the industry because of the government shutdown. Also, there was an update from Charles Wisniewski, who runs our Inside the GSEs newsletter. MBA luckily won another court victory in their overtime pay case. We also have a new crunching of the numbers on FHA loan volume in the second quarter. This is the second quarter, not the third quarter. FHA loan volume was essentially flat. Also on imfnews.com, we have an update on the cash call situation. Cash call is a big refi specialist shop run by Paul Redham. There's been talk that the company is for sale, which we know, and there's been mixed reports whether that sale has been either dead or on hold. An assistant there told us late last week that the sale is still alive, but we have no other details out there about that. Also, in the vendor space, Wingspan is opening a due diligence advisory business. That's interesting. Clayton's expanding their due diligence business. And also we get into once more the government shutdown and reports about the USDA program, which is essentially closed. So there's plenty of mortgage news out there this week, as always. So I don't know what you're hearing out there, Alice, but we're plenty busy at IMF News and Inside Mortgage Finance.
We are hearing a lot. As a matter of fact, that's going to be one of the topics we definitely talk to Mark Renault, our special guest, about, to kind of hear what they're feeling. But it is just anybody who says it's not impacting them, that just means folks must, what, be closing loans without IRS transcription, Social Security number verification, and they don't do RD, right? It's difficult to imagine how, some companies are trying to take it case by case. And but it's there's a lot of companies holding up closings, and the trickle down to that for lock agreements and purchase agreements is measurable.
Right, and I know there was a mortgage company that went public on Friday, Cherry Hill Mortgage Investment Trust, which is the a REIT spun out of Freedom Mortgage, and I think they're in either Indiana or New Jersey. I can't remember where their legal headquarters are. That's Stan Middleman's shop. Everyone knows Freedom. They're an active FHA lender. So they went public, of all days, last Friday, and their stock went down 7%. I didn't check it today. I'm sure they'll be back. It's just a matter of time. But it's unfortunate that there's people still trying to raise equity and do IPOs, and I would guess, for a few, it's going to be tough going to get those deals done too.
Now, in your opinion, do you think the first thing you talked about, the letter to FIFA, do you think that'll carry some weight to stop the reduction of the loan amounts?
From what I hear, my industry sources basically tell us that they're hearing a lot of pushback, so to speak, and it sounds like at the very least when FHFA, they hate to be called FIFA, by the way, though
right.
I use it all the time. Let's just use FIFA. Maybe they're not listening. That FIFA is getting a lot of pressure from the industry to hold off on this thing. Now, everyone knows they're going to be faced with lower loan limits at some point. But I guess because of the incoming CFPB rules and regs and getting up to speed on having systems in place, Mortgage Bank is already dealing with a lot. So, originally we heard it was going to be put off to late in the first quarter. Now we're hearing perhaps sometime in the second quarter. But, the lower loan limits are coming. It's just a matter of when. But who knows? Maybe this government shutdown will affect things too. I mean, there's so many factors in play right now. It's hard to say. And
right.
The thing is, FIFA is not talking about it. They're basically admitting that they're working on lower loan limits. So they've admitted that, but they're not giving much information out there in the way of a timetable. We hear by mid October, which is basically next week, that they're going to say something. So I guess we'll have to wait
till then. I think what's important for people to pick up on is that they're not saying this is postponed until next year. We're not hearing we're going to get a total reprieve for 2014. It's just a postponement of what is inevitably going to happen.
Correct. Yeah. It's definitely a delay, but no one knows how delayed. It's a matter of that. So.
Well,
that's sort of the long and short of it.
All right. Well, imfnews.com, everyone needs to go there and get the full detail of all the stories that Paul brought us up to speed on. We really, really appreciate the time that you take, Paul. We know you have crazy deadlines, and we really appreciate that you take time out to be on the program each week and give us the latest imfnews.com update. So thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you, Alice. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye. So after Paul, now we have to segue right into my spot. So the legislative update right now is really just trying to tee you up for what's going to be talked about in the next segment of the program. So we want to a level set a little bit on what is going on with the regulations, as if you're not living them every day, but some of you don't have to. So I want to just kind of give you at a high level here. Our list that we're coping with is the high-priced mortgage loan rules, right, trying to get the truth in lending, the new definitions basically for our Section 32 and our Section 35, different high-priced and high-cost mortgage rules. We've got to get all that programming put in place. We have high-priced mortgage loan appraisal rules, again, for the first part of January. We have the ability to repay, which really is its own component that is also part of defining a qualified mortgage, right? So we've got the product side of qualified mortgage with all of its points and fees testing. Now, there have been I'll follow up with that in just a minute here. We also have the high-cost mortgage and home ownership counseling piece that goes with Reg C and Reg X. We've got loan originator compensation, which for the most part I think everyone's fairly on board with that. But for those of you who have other types of alternative compensation plans, you have 401ks and profit sharing, those types of programs are really impacted by that to make sure you're, for some it opens doors, for some it's absolute clarification and closes some doors. So it means relooking at all loan originator agreements. We have the servicing changes within Reg Z and then Reg X, and then, of course, we have the copies of the appraisals and other written valuations under ECOA for Reg B changes as well. Now, we have our health check, which is a checklist for compliance. For those of you who are saying, can somebody just give me a checklist, send an email to alice.alvey@indicom.net, I-N-D-E-C-O-M-M.net, and we'll be happy to give you information on how you can get an absolute checklist for this. Now, one of the big things I want to give everyone a heads up about is that there are a lot of unanswered questions still, and that is partly contributing to what's going on in the technology space for those providers to actually finish programming. We have lots of questions concerning checking for Fannie and Freddie's old 5-point test versus now they will have the 3-point limit on point or 3% limit on points and fees. We need clarification from CFPB on actually calculating total loan amount. I've heard differences of opinions for this, and there are really two layers to it for calculating what is that number that I have to work with to even begin my 3-point test calculation, right? So it couldn't be just I take the number off the note. I have to look at the amount, especially for our refis. What are we financing? How much is there possibly a closing fee that's paid directly or indirectly by the creditor? Is there a credit life premium involved for those of you who still offer those? And really looking at what is the total calculation for total loan amount, making sure you have that programming completely understood. Then you have to make sure you understand the interest rate before discount. Now, there was some guidance from Paul Mondor at a mortgage lending conference. He provided a little bit of clarification on that, that at least you can add in loan-level price adjustments to help determine what is considered my interest rate before discount. So we do have some guidance on that as well to help you with, you know, determining where do I start before, so that I even know have I exceeded 2 points by the regulator's calculation. So that interest rate before discount is a big one to make sure your team is really diving into it to make sure that they have it right. And then the third component within all of that is seller paid closing costs. How does that impact when the seller pays certain costs, when they don't? That's also not a straight line determination of, well, excluded if the seller's paying it. If the seller pays loan originator compensation, credit life, or any kind of prepayment penalty incurred at the refinance to the same creditor or an affiliate, then that's included. So you do have to be careful that these are not straight-up definitions as we have traditionally thought. Nothing is the same. So those are just a few hot buttons I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of within that points and fees calculation. All right, so that's going to close out my segment today on the legislative update, and we'll be right back after this quick break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everyone, and we are coming up on my favorite segment, that is the Profit Doctor. So, Andy Schell, are you out there ready to give us words of wisdom today? You know, for some reason the other day I was thinking of Aesop's Fables, and I immediately thought of you. So I know you've had some great stories that relate to mortgage banking. So what do you have for us today?
Well, a couple of thoughts, Alice. First off, great job filling in for Dave. You're doing really, really well.
Right,
and in listening to you do your segment, it made me realize that for everybody listening on the phone, you got to download the show because there are so many times where I wanted to push pause, make a note, and call you and say, Alice, wait a second, what does that mean? Wait, what does that mean? Oh, you mean we include if the seller pays the closing cost, if it's Thursday, we include it, but if it's Friday afternoon, we exclude it, unless it's the fourth Friday of the month. It's like, oh my goodness, there's
or,
so much to this.
Or you had a board meeting and you decided not to care about QM that day.
Exactly. So. There's so much to this. Wow. Well, the thing I wanted to talk about some today, Alice, is change, because our special guest today is going to talk about managing change. Change management, managing change, dealing with change. You know, we're having to do that today just because the government shutdown. The Republicans are trying to not fund Obamacare, and the Democrats want to fund the whole thing, and the Republicans are saying, no, let's fund some of it, but not all of it, and Democrats are going, no, let's not fund any of it unless we're going to fund all of it. So it's an interesting dynamic that was maybe predicted, maybe not predictable, but nevertheless, there's a change that affects us because of that, as you were mentioning earlier about getting IRS data or being able to get RDA information. So, you know, a quick side note about non-essential government. If it's non-essential, why do you have it? That's
right.
that's a topic for another show.
I often wondered about that term, too. It doesn't come across well.
It doesn't. But, you know, as you think about, if you think about change, you think about change management, and if you look at volatility of change and the dynamics of the world around us, there was a book written in the 60s called Future Shock, and it talked about the rate of change, and it looked at printing presses and a bunch of other things, and it tried to draw linear extrapolations, and what it concluded is that it's not linear extrapolations, they're algebraic, which means they're logarithmic. It's a sloped, it's a curved increase, so the rate of change keeps going faster and faster and faster. And some of that is what we're experiencing today in mortgage banking with the regulatory environment change that's coming. And it's not just mortgage lenders, it's commercial banks as well. They're having new regulations to comply with as well. So it's everybody. Everybody's dealing with all of this change. And, you know, I'm one of the kind of people who I kind of like change. I actually enjoy change to a degree. But there's a lot of people who don't. And there's a great book out called Who Moved My Cheese? And it talks a lot about dealing with, accepting, and understanding change. Because in order to survive in mortgage banking going forward, it's really going to need to be a lot of people in the industry are going to need to accept the fact that change is a reality and get to the mindset that change is good, where we embrace it, we accept it, and actually even enjoy it. Deal with it, accept it, and understand it. And so there was a couple of things about dealing with change that I wanted to talk about just here real briefly in preparation for Mark coming on. And when we think about change and we deal with change, the worst thing we can do is just pretend that it's not going to happen or accept that it's going to happen but don't do anything to prepare for it. Really, the path to dealing with change is being prepared for change. And the way that we prepare for change is I have six items that I wrote down just thinking about how we deal with change in the companies that we work with. And what we're going to do is we're going to plan. We have to have a plan about what it's going to do and how it's going to work. We're going to build a structure around the change that's going to take place. We're going to test implementing the change that has to be complied with to make sure it's working right. We're going to implement it because we have to implement it. And then we're going to evaluate. We don't want to just stop when we implement it. We then have to evaluate the outcome, reevaluate the results, make sure things really are being calculated like we think they should be, make certain that all the elements really are correct. And then as we do this evaluation process, we then have to adjust. So it's important to think of change as managing change as a cycle. It's not just a straight line that goes across. It's more like a circle where we're going to plan, structure, test, implement, evaluate, and then adjust. And then as we adjust, then if we have to make changes, we have to plan the changes, structure the changes,
right,
test them, and then implement them. And again, we're going to evaluate and plan and adjust again. So think of managing change as a circle. You just don't start and end and you're done. You're never done. You're always adapting, adjusting, planning, evaluating, adjusting. And the dynamics of change just makes that circle go faster. So we're dealing with a faster spinning circle than before, but as long as we understand it and can see it and know it and accept it, we can get through all of this. So embrace it, accept it, enjoy it, and have a plan to implement it, and we can get through all of the regulatory changes that are coming down the pike at us. And as I'd encourage everybody to download this show and put the push the pause button every time Alice mentions something new that was happened in her segment, and write it down and call her, because we got to be prepared for this stuff. So that's my piece, Alice.
Oh, I think that's fantastic, because you're talking about something that I think is so critical in this, where I think people do look at it as, well, as long as I get the computer program to properly calculate this, you know, I'll just say 3-point test, then I'm good. Once I get on the other side of that, then I can go back to focusing on closing loans again. But I don't think that's going to be the case here, especially. We're still waiting for some interpretations. There's always a chance for glitches. There's procedures that have to be put in place for things the systems won't be able to do, and that's that adjust and replan phase. So do you think your clients, Andy, that you've seen are devoting the proper resources to this? Because this is big.
Oh, Alice, that's a loaded question.
Okay, non-clients.
Sure.
You think non-clients are?
My sense is that no, they're not. People are underestimating compliance. They're underestimating the process to fully embrace compliance. They're underestimating the path to be fully compliant, and they're underestimating the cost to be in compliance. And some are even refusing to accept the fact that it's going to cost to be in compliance. And like I said on last week's show, the regulators don't care how much it costs, and the regulators don't care. The implementation is non-optional. You have to do it, and they don't care how much it costs. So what we have to do as an industry is we have to accept the fact that there are going to be compliance costs. And right now, because there's volume shrinking as the refi business is shrinking, there's margin compression where people are trying to cut the margin a little bit because everybody's trying to win the deal, because there's now more deals than there are. There's fewer deals than there is capacity to manage those deals. And so we're going backwards. We need to expand the margin. We need to increase our margins to have an element in every single pricing model that includes a compliance overhead allocation. We've got to start pricing it into our model so that we do have enough money to pay for the compliance, because otherwise we're going to wake up surprised that we're not in compliance. We're going to get fined by the CFPB, or we're going to go out of business because we have all these compliance costs without the revenue to offset it. And that's just a reality of life today. We've got to plan for it and fund the compliance cost structure. Like it or not, it's here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, thanks so much for your insight, Andy. Are you going to be able to stay on for the next segment when we have Mark talking about?
Yes, very much so. I'm looking forward to hearing him.
Grassroots level? Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Andy Schill from The Profit Doctor, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Alice Alvey filling in for Dave Licken today. Dave is out speaking at the Data Vision User Conference out in Connecticut, and he wishes he could be here. Maybe he'll actually be able to jump on at the end of the show here, but we will go on without him, even though we miss him terribly, and he will definitely be joining us next week. So let's go ahead and move on with Tony Garitano. Tony, are you out there? I would love to pick your brain a little bit on what's going on with all this loan-level due diligence that the lenders need today.
I'm here, Allison. I actually thought that Andy's comments were really insightful in that, you know, change is a constant, as it appears to be these days in the mortgage industry. And I think that's the case with loan-level due diligence as well. And I think what I'm hearing is that a lot of lenders are either outsourcing that responsibility or they're staffing up internally and using, you know, in some cases, antiquated technology, you know, in some cases, even Excel spreadsheets. And I think that that's regrettable. It probably should be a combination of both in-house initiatives and outsourced initiatives.
Yeah, I think I'm always surprised when we go in and conduct consulting reviews and look at, you know, whether we're looking at compliance or efficiencies or ways that we might be able to help with some of that outsourcing, how many Excel spreadsheets there are at most companies. It's as you said, it's you want to be able to try and find ways that your other systems can you don't have to depend on Excel, but it does seem like they have a long life in mortgage banking. So on the other side of the coin, how are vendors handling the loan level due diligence then?
Well, I was struck by some news that came across this morning that Paul actually alluded to in his segment, whereby, you know, Wingspan Portfolio Advisors is opening up a new due diligence arm. And I think that vendors are taking that strategy. They're staffing up. They're opening new offices to handle different types of due diligence practices. They're making acquisitions if they don't have that capability within their shop already. We mm-hmm. saw Accenture buy Mortgage Cadence to offer more end-to-end offering on the outsourced BPO end of things. And even with Wingspan, they acquired DeMont, and I'm not sure if I'm DeMont and Associates. I don't know if that I'm pronouncing that correctly, but, you know, to offer more comprehensive due diligence services to the industry. A lot of vendors are offering these services in their existing systems by updating their rules engines. And they think if they can program in a new rule, then automatically their system is updated. And, you know, I think that the industry is going to come to realize that that may not be a foolproof solution come next year. There may be a little bit more to it than just a few new lines of code in your LOS. But I think that vendors are beefing up their services in general, Alice, whether they're coding more, outsourcing more, acquiring more. You know, vendors are very active. They realize that one of the strategies of their lender clients is to say, my vendor will take care of it, and they're trying really hard to take care of it.
Well, that's the case here, too. So, well, that's good. I think more companies are open to the idea of outsourcing certain factors of the loan process. You know, before it was, oh, I want to hang on to it. But I think this swing in the volumes, you know, this dramatic drop of refis disappearing has made a lot of folks say, well, you know what, maybe there's a lot to be said to being able to have more of a variable cost structure. So. But a lot of this, too, is just how can I be compliant if I can also look to my vendor to give me some measure of backup on the understanding of interpreting all the compliance as well.
Yeah, and I think there'll be more third-party reviews of their vendors as well, as Andy has and others have been talking about on the show over the past few months. It's not going to be enough for the vendor to say I'm compliant anymore.
Right.
They'll have to go through some rigorous testing on their end as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Tony. Anything else our listeners should know before we let you go?
They should know that you're doing an amazing job filling in for Dave, Alice.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thanks. Yeah, I haven't hit a wrong button so far, so we're doing okay. But, well, thanks so much, Tony, for your insight. I love getting the technology update from you, and we'll be talking with you next week. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Alice.
You're welcome. All right. Well, now let's go ahead and bring on our special guest. We have with us today Mark Renaud, who is with First State Bank. And actually, before that, I had Mark on and actually before that, we had Mark worked with him very closely at many lenders, worked with him through the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association, and wanted to get Mark on the call right now. So, Mark, are you out there?
Alice, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. Sorry for stuttering a little bit there. I was looking at my switchboard, and I thought I heard that crazy click at the 30-minute mark like last time where it shut down on me. So anyway, I'm glad you're out there, and we're still live. So let's talk a little bit. I think for the most part, you know, at your company, you guys are really on the street there trying to make the right call between our two big topics today, right? So I'd like to first start out with the government shutdown and what you all are seeing on a day-to-day basis is really impacting business. And then after that, move into talking about how you all are implementing the regulation and handling this change management in the mortgage operation. So let's start with the government shutdown. How is that impacting you all in the daily operations over there?
Yeah, for us, the government shutdown hasn't affected us too bad in that it really more on our FHA originations more than anything. What's funny is you realize the number of people that never realized that the tax transcripts requirements are really investor overlays and that Fannie and Freddie never actually required them per se. It was funny how many people actually didn't know that. But so for us, for majority of our borrowers, we're allowing them to get to closing. I know some of the bigger aggregators aren't. And what's funny is some of the larger aggregators also have conflicting requirements between their retail line and their wholesale lines. So it's affecting everyone differently across the board depending on how you're set up to do business.
Well, and Mark, tell us a little bit about your company. I know a lot about it, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the bank and, you know, the type of business, how much volume you do and so forth.
You know, absolutely. First State Bank, we've been around for about 97 years. We'll be 97 years in about 5 days. But prior to my existence here, they did a lot of portfolio lending, nothing really on the secondary market. And they brought me on board because of my previous mortgage experience at a mortgage lender, which was a non-bank entity, for the previous 12 years. And reality, we do about $10 million a month, nothing extravagant. But the one thing I have found that is unilaterally across the board is regardless of how much volume you're doing, Andy nailed it on the head with that change is imminent. You just need to accept it because the one thing I like to say is this, the only two things you can't avoid in life are death and taxes. I think we could add change in the mortgage industry to that list now, quite honestly, because if you're not changing with the times and all the regulatory that's updates that are going out, you are going to find yourself dead in the water at some point. But we do a lot of... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, for us in particular, you know, we have our health check product. We have to have staff that just monitors that. All the training courses, you know, instructors by topic to monitor all the constant changes. You know, so you have to multiply that when you look at trying to run a mortgage operation. I'm trying to handle those jobs as well as just trying to close loans.
Yeah, definitely. And it is, if you're doing more than 20 loans a month in your shop, you definitely need to make sure that you have someone dedicated fully to doing your compliance and all these regulatory updates. It is a full-time job, and most people, and most companies that I deal with on a regular basis, they have actually added multiple people to that position and not just outsourcing it. It is that complex. I remember a day when we would get our financials and the findings from our audits that we would do, and people say, "Yep, got them, put them in a filing cabinet, never give them a second thought." And it's now become a job where you have to actually read those, understand those, do the responses that you're required to do, and quite honestly, the regulators really don't care what your reasoning is why you're not following them. I mean, they're hitting us all pretty hard, actually. So there was an eye-opener moving to the bank with regards to the FDIC and a few other regulators that come in here. Just the differences between the non-banking mortgage lenders and the bank lenders, what they were going through. And now it seems like we're all going to be going through the same scrutiny. And there's going to be a lot of wake-up calls for some folks out there.
Well, and I want one more question, then I'm going to pass it over to Andy here. So which of the new regulations is causing the most challenges for you right now when working through the implementation plans? You know, obviously there are many layers of an implementation plan, but which one would you describe as being the most challenging?
I'm actually torn between two of them, but probably the biggest one from my group right now is actually falling under the ability to repay. And the reason being is we still have, you know, a number of definitions that haven't been provided to us yet. And I love how the government said, no, you can still keep doing business as is the way you've been doing it, no problem, as long as you do it according to our appendix Q here. And they give you 28 pages on how to figure out this is how you should be underwriting a loan. And the reality is there's still so much interpretation left in that the real question becomes, okay, what decision are we going to make that's going to keep us compliant as much as we can be, yet still allow us to lend, to the general public? It's a real fine line there in trying to figure that out. And I've had more meetings on that topic alone than probably any other aspect of this, because there's just so many options that, so many ways you can interpret things. And then on top of it, the ramifications now with having no cap on the penalties and whatnot, it can be very, very expensive.
So, Andy, let's jump on in here. What questions do you have for Mark?
Well, hey, Mark. Thanks for being on the broadcast. Nice to hear your voice. Look forward to meeting you in person sometime soon. I wanted to ask a couple of questions about philosophical alignment. You moving from a mortgage bank to a commercial bank, and we'll let everybody know in advance too, though, that these questions I'm asking you aren't pre-scripted. You didn't give me a list of questions, so if one of these questions that I ask is something you want to talk about later, we can certainly do that, because we certainly don't want to disclose the secret sauce of First State Bank Mortgage at the same time.
No problem.
So I get in trouble for asking too many questions. As a matter of fact, last year I was on the Future Leaders panel, and I asked too many hard questions, so they didn't want me to come back this year because I asked too many questions. So I want to be respectful of not putting you on the hot seat here. So, but I'm curious to know about your experience having been with a non-regulated, except for FHA and agency mortgage lender, and now to go to an FDIC commercial bank and have all that regulation. What was that transition like, and how did you adapt and make the change to be able to go from the – and I don't want to put you in the category of the mortgage lender that's just, don't worry about the details, I don't care if we dot all the I's, just make more volume, as long as the loans get sold and purchased, nobody cares. I'm not saying that you're that, but there are some mortgage lenders that are like that. And how do you take that kind of mentality and in the world we're in today with CFPB extending FDIC and OCC guidelines down to mortgage companies, how do you make that transition from, like Alice and I like to say, process matters, you go into an environment like you're in now? How did you make that transition? How did you deal with the philosophical misalignment that exists at the start from mortgage banking into commercial bank mortgage banking?
Andy, that's actually a fantastic question. And I actually tell you, I am still adapting to it. I've been here almost 3 years now. And you're right, that is actually the prevalent attitude in the industry, is that, from a non-bank entity, you're sitting at, well, as long as we get it sold to the third party, we're fine. We have no issues at that point. And that is completely gone by the wayside. And I've always been of the opinion that I've done things, we always do things above board, and always do, the line I use with all my employees is, if you can't sit in the witness chair next to the judge and answer that honestly with what you're about to do, don't do it. And there are some people that are willing to actually push that envelope, and they're like, maybe we'll do it. We'll see if we get away with it. And the real tough part is actually getting everyone to understand why they do what they do. Again, before it was real easy. You do your part, and we sell it, and we're on our merry way. Here, there's been so much more documentation requirements, so many procedural requirements, and now we have to rewrite a majority of them simply because of all these changes. But that's probably the biggest difference, is actually being able to document and show what your procedures are and what's expected of everyone and hold everyone to that standard. And some of the other mortgage lenders I know in the area that are non-banks, I know I talked to quite a few of them in my area, and a lot of them are already doing this. There's some very good shops. There's something to be said for those that have survived all these changes in the past few years. And but that's really it is a big, big change from a mindset perspective. And I think actually with these changes, the one good thing that will come out of it is that we will all be, everyone, you always hear the term a level playing field. I truly think this is really going to bring that to fruition here for everyone. For some people, not so much, until the CFPB comes down really hard on someone for some violations. It will take something like that to kick some of the other people in the butt, so to speak, to get them up and running. But this is really going to make everyone do everything pretty much the same.
Yes.
So,
well,
Mark,
Alice, if I can,
so
oh,
I know
go
you.
Ahead, yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I know you've been to a lot of events on this one. What seems to be the tone concerning non-QM loans? Because I, you know, as a bank that does portfolio lending, you know, out there in that in the community bank environment, that's one of the big unanswered questions. Is, you know, will lenders still adapt to this? Will the community bankers look at having non-QM loans on the book from a product standpoint, maybe, and then come up with their own way to meet this ability to repay standard that they believe, you know, would meet the regulator? So, what are your thoughts on that? What are you hearing in the market? Not specific to your bank, but at the community
right.
banker circle.
Yeah, actually, I've spoken to several of them, and because that's one thing I found is imperative in this business anymore is you should. Never, you shouldn't be seeing as everyone as competition. You should all be peers and working together, quite honestly. And majority of the community bankers I've dealt with are all saying, yes, we're definitely going to be doing some portfolio lending that does not meet the QM rules. And I can say I plan on doing that as well on a very limited basis. The question is exactly that. Where do you draw the line? How far do you go? You know, we have customers that, quite honestly, have been with this bank for 50 years that come to me and say we want a loan, and they don't necessarily meet all the requirements, but they've repaid the 20-some loans I've given them over the years. You know, how do you say no to that person? So
right.
really, it's figuring out, you know, when and where you do it, put it in a policy, document it, and, you know, stick to it. That's really the gist I'm getting from everybody.
Well, and to Andy's point, having that circle, I think, of validation that, you know, you have the history. I think that's going to be the hard part. You're going to have to base it on your current background with that particular customer and your overall delinquency numbers and so forth, and then somehow be able to continue to monitor that to make sure it's holding true into the future and the changing economics. Andy, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead. What, you had a question.
Oh, no. Great topic, Alice. So continue to explore that. I wanted to also ask Mark about some of the things we've been talking about recently that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and that's the vendor management. We in mortgage banking, Alice, you mentioned earlier about the efficiency of outsourcing and how outsourcing is an important element of mortgage banking, but we also now have this new rule that's not new to banks, but it's new to mortgage companies, that we have to validate, test, perform due diligence, and make certain that any vendor that we hire is complying with all federal laws relating to consumer protection. So has that been something that's been an adjustment, Mark, that you guys have had to implement to make certain your appraisers, your title companies, your, you know, any company that has a customer interface or customer data access is complying with this new bulletin?
Yeah, it's been quite the adventure, actually. We, again, being at the bank, they've been doing this for a number of years prior to ever having to be in the non-bank world. But me joining day one was, I have to do what? And I've come to the realization that we're definitely in a world where relationships matter because a lot of the folks that I do business with are people that I've known for 15, 20 years in this industry. So I know about their companies, and you really need to be able to answer questions about them. I just recently had the FDIC actually leave our shop. And I was grilled pretty hard on that. And what was nice to say is, yes, I've done business with this particular company for 15 years. I know that they're doing this, and here are the results of their findings, of their due diligence, and I've done, you know, on-site spot inspections with them, and being able to say that stuff. I'm finding more and more, yeah, the regulators want to make sure that you're doing those things, and I see that everyone's being held to that same standard. And so, again, mm-hmm. It's that uniformity across the board. And it was a real eye-opener for me, but, I, you know, with where everything was going, it's like, okay, we're all going to have to do this. Just accept it and move on. You can't change it unless you want to quit the industry and go somewhere else.
Exactly. Well, Mark, and I also don't want to dominate the questions here, but I'm curious, you know, the topic is managing change. And so you had mentioned earlier when you were first responding to Alice about managing the acceptance of change throughout your organization, and that's really the key. At the originator level, the processor level, the impact of process matters really has to get pushed down to the front line. Are there any tips or techniques or tools that you've used to help get the word out and manage that the people really are doing it right as it comes to some of these items?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You did hit on the one with the Who Moved My Cheese. It's an older book. I want to say it's over 10 years old now. But, you know, why read the book when you can show the movie, which is the first thing I did when I came on board. There's a video of it out there. And actually, it's the first thing I did because it was a 20-minute video explaining the same topic. And I explained to everyone, the one thing in my world that you'll see is that the one constant you're going to have besides your job, unless you really screw up, is that I'm going to be changing everything. And you need to understand this. And so I started with that concept. And then what I started doing was being new to a company and not knowing a single person here, is I would interview all the employees to kind of find out where they stood, you know, depending on their job, where they stood on their knowledge. And then after that, every month we have a minimum of once a month we have an operations meeting where I assign a particular regulation to an employee and I say, okay, you've now got a month to figure out these particular points about the regulation, and then you need to explain it to everyone at the next meeting. And one of the big topics on there is, you know, what are the costs for not following this regulation and for having violations? And the one thing I found is that universal truth, if it affects someone's pocketbook, they're going to learn it.
That's good.
Well, that's great. So what about the originators? I mean, in that whole scheme then, Mark, are you including the originators in that they would actually have to go look up a regulation and report back?
Yeah, actually, I haven't got to them yet. Because I wanted to get through my operations people first, because quite honestly, you need that solid foundation before I move forward to the things that I know are going to be a little bit tougher to do.
Oh, good point.
I make sure everyone's on board there. Once they're on board, then I know that the loan officers can't pull any wool over their eyes, and they're actually next on the agenda starting next year. That's going to be part of their process. But they also get hit for various violations as well, because they have a bonus program that they don't get to receive if they violate certain aspects of it. So. They are accountable as well.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, it's always dicey with the sales folks because there's a certain amount that you want to prepare them for, but giving a lot of information that just scares people to go, that's it, I can't take one more thing, right? When you had a good salesperson
exactly.
Who goes, all right, that's it, I'm throwing in my hat. You know, you want to avoid that, and the Who Moved My Cheese, trying to help people manage through it and not be overwhelmed by it. And so getting the sales folks in, I think you bring up a good point. Do it when your ops is ready so that they have the confidence that it can be handled well and you can answer questions like, well, how are we going to track this? How is this going to be done? What's the potential impact to consumers?
Exactly. I mean, the word that sums it up the best is education. You have to continually educate everyone, and you'll never know everything. And the minute you think you do, you probably need to retire because it's not possible.
Right.
But yeah, just keep educating everyone continuously.
Andy, I'll pass it to you. What question? What's your next question for Mark?
Well, again, we're a little bit winging it, and I don't want to put Mark too badly on the spot.
You can't hurt him. He can handle anything. Yeah.
Okay. I have an opinion on everything, right, wrong, or indifferent. I'll have an answer for you.
He made that very clear. He has an opinion on everything, right, which I love because that's why we're doing this show, right, because I think, Mark, you speak to a lot of the folks and what a lot of the folks are thinking out there.
Yeah.
Right. Well, okay, Mark, then given that there are the additional compliance requirements and given that even one of the Fed governors recently commented that the mid-tier – small to mid-sized commercial banks were going to have a 16 or 18% drop in their return on assets, which is one of the measures of a commercial bank. Since commercial banks are having an increase in cost for compliance and mortgage companies are having an even greater impact on costs because they're having to create compliance, at least beyond just document compliance, in a much greater sense than ever before, how are you able to price in to your secondary margin an element to cover an increased compliance cost in a market where you have people who may or may not care about compliance at all competing against your originators? And, of course, originators, the only reason an originator ever doesn't get volume is because the prices aren't good enough. And so, right? So how do you manage the reality of a competitive environment with a high-risk compliance environment working for a commercial bank?
That is that actually plays into the very topic that's in my upcoming sales meeting. Because honestly, I try not to I try not to play in the world of it's all based on price, because honestly, you know what, I tell everyone up front, one, we'll never be the lowest price, we'll never be the higher price, but we will be competitive. I'm not going to play that game. The big thing is hiring people that believe what you believe. And that is probably the biggest point I can tell, the advice I can give to anybody.
Well, that's good. I'm going to write that down.
Because honestly, the people that I have employed for me right now is salespeople. When I came on board, there was roughly 9 originators on board. I fired all but 2 of them because they had the mentality that I sit in the bank, customers will come in, I'll be able to do the refi, and I'll just sit here and wait for them to come to me. I needed people that, one, wanted to go out and get the business, number one, but number two, that believed that, you know what, you do the job right, you do it up front, you do it above board, and your reputation's going to get you the business. I've lost count the number of times I've had my originators come to me saying, yeah, no, we want the cheapest price, but they still went with us because they trust our bank, they trust our brand, they trust what we're doing. You know, they believe in us, or, you know, they've known our particular originator for years on end. It's really, you have to have people the same mindset, because if you don't, you set yourself up for that potential issue where you have a loan officer who's going rogue and doing things against what I'll say is company culture, or at least a minimum department culture. And when you do that, you open yourself up to risk. You've mitigated by having people with the same value set as you.
Perfect.
Once you
get
the right people, then how do you one of the things Andy's trying to get to also is that building into pricing, though? I mean, are you seeing, changes in rates just simply because lenders got to try and get that better margin and they've got higher overhead because of the compliance? You know, from a competitive standpoint, that's a tough sell. You don't want to be the first company out there trying to nudge that margin solely based on operational costs.
No, exactly. And that is that's the beautiful thing about having the sales staff that I have right now that I've managed to put together. They understand, because I've been talking about this from day one. These changes are coming. We have all these issues that we're dealing with. They come at a cost. They also understand with the yellow comp rule that's come into play, they want to make X number of dollars, comes at a cost. And so it's that whole education piece. This is how the system works. This is how I have to calculate risk, and this is how I assign a value to that. So if you understand this, I don't even get the phone call, hey, can I give a lender credit on this, or hey, can we do this for this borrower because I'm in competition for this. Not going to happen because they understand it, and they tell everyone. I said, you know what? Educate them. You have someone that's guaranteeing them a super low rate with no cost. I'm like, it's not going to happen. Not in this world. That's called bait and switch. You might have heard of it. I said, you educate them and let them know when this particular point of the process comes to fruition. Call me back, and I'll say, yeah, I'm still available. I can still help you, and I'm being honest and upfront with you. And we've gotten more deals that way than we have just trying to beat everyone on price, because I don't want to compete with them on price.
Yes.
That's great. Well, so what do you think is still the biggest unanswered question in this regulatory, other than is the government going to start up any day soon? But, here's one of my favorite. You know, the government shutdown, I have to say, has caused a new world of creative thinking. So as we mentioned, there are some of the loans that won't close at some companies because they can't run the 4506T or they can't do a Social Security number validation for the customer. And now you run into all that implication on, well, now what's going to happen with the lock if the lock is going to expire? And what about reissuing good faith estimates? And someone saying, well, is what change in circumstance is that? And someone saying, is that an act of God? Kind of act of God. What bucket does that fall in if with the government shutdown for I need a change in circumstance? Right?
Well, that's Mark has 20 seconds to answer that question.
Yeah. Actually, I will tell you, I haven't run into that issue yet, so I don't have an answer for you. I can tell you, in my opinion, I explain to people, you signed a rate lock, here it is. You know, no different than if the rate moved the other way, you'd want us to hold on to it and give you what we promised. I mean, again, the whole education comes full circle there.
All right. Well, I think we just ran out of show, so thank you. And take care, everyone. And we'll have a great day. Thanks, Andy. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
There are 60 seconds left on the streaming, I believe. So I'm going to go ahead and play our outro and still in case it's still recording. But thank you all for your time. Have a great day.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.